Welcome, I'm Lauren Mahoney, Curatorial Assistant in the Department of Painting and Sculpture here at MoMA, and I worked on the exhibition Matisse Radical Invention, 1913 to 1917, with the two curators, John Elderfield of MoMA and Stephanie D'Alessandro of the Art Institute of Chicago, and a large team including conservators, scientists, technicians, archivists, and research assistants. This exhibition focuses on a brief but significant five-year period in Matisse's career, beginning with his 1913 return to Paris from Morocco and concluding with his 1917 departure for Nice, where he would live for the remainder of his life. Matisse's time in Paris coincided with the introduction of avant-garde movements such as Cubism and Futurism, as well as the outbreak of World War I. The works in the exhibition are among the artist's most abstract, austere, and experimental, and reflect his ongoing search for new methods of expression, as well as his reaction to the art of the time. He would later recollect that during this period, he painted using the methods of modern construction, his only known characterization of his practice at the time, and likely a reference to Cubism. Two anchors of the exhibition and the largest paintings he made in this period are The Moroccans and Bathers by a River. Matisse would later describe these two paintings as among the most pivotal of his career. The long development of each work and the vast amount of information we've been able to learn about them makes their study of particular interest in determining Matisse's methods in the 1913 to 17 moment. While the exhibition focuses on the years 1913 to 17, we start the show a bit earlier with the works Matisse made from 1907 to 1909. His images of Arcadia were inspired by those of Paul Cézanne, an artist Matisse greatly admired, and particularly the painting Three Bathers, which Matisse bought in 1899. It's featured in the first room of the exhibition, and it's the image on the left. It's a painting Matisse owned for 37 years before donating it to a museum in Paris. And you see on the right, Matisse's bather, which is a clear copy of the figure on the left in the Cézanne. It's in the same pose, kind of entering the stream in Matisse's bather. She's now submerged in the water. And I should say that despite her kind of close cropped hair and the kind of androgynous nature of the figure, it is a female bather. And we also know from documentation from Matisse's son that this was a model named Lulu Bruti. So she was in fact a female despite this kind of androgynous effect Matisse has given her. Also in the first room, we have one of Matisse's most kind of innovative paintings of this early part of the 20th century, the Blue Nude on the right. And there are two bronzes in the first room, two bronzes of reclining figures that are related to this painting. And he actually made them kind of simultaneously. He was working on the sculpture originally and kind of made a mistake in kind of a vigorous moment of activity in working on the sculpture. He knocked the clay off of the turntable and destroyed it. And in order to kind of remember what he had done, he picked up a canvas and started sketching. So there's this interrelationship between painting and drawing and sculpting that we start to see in this period, and we'll see it moving forward, in particular with works like The Backs, which are these life-size figural sculptures that he made simultaneously with painting. Bathers with a Turtle is a painting Matisse made of an image of Arcadia again, and this three-figure composition kind of playing on the Cézanne prototype. The crouching figure on the left is kind of feeding this turtle a piece of lettuce, and there is a Cézanne bather's composition that's at the Philadelphia Museum that has a very similar crouching figure to this one here on the left. And this painting is featured in the exhibition not only for its relationship to Bathers by a River, which Matisse conceived in this period, and I'll get to that in a minute, but also because of his technique in putting the composition together. So he's really making a lot of revisions on the canvas. It's not as quickly and spontaneously done as some of his earlier work. It's heavily repainted. He's moving parts of the composition around, but he's also leaving that evidence of those changes right on the surface. So here, you can see kind of the ghost of where the figure was before and how he's moved her over to the right. It's a lot more evident when you see the painting in real life. So if you go upstairs to the exhibition today, you'll see what I'm referring to, but parts here where, you know, he's kind of cut off her forearm, he's made it her elbow shorter, elements where you see flesh tones under these greens and blues where he has moved these elements around. So it really highlights Matisse's interest in process and how he's making these revisions, but he's not hiding them. He's not trying to show you this very finished, polished, beautiful painting. He is showing you like how he gets there and how he makes these revisions, and is showing you his process and how he's composing the figures and making these changes and allowing you to see the process. I mean, he said he was interested in expression above all else, and instinct, and so it's very much in vain with those statements by Matisse about his painting process. Also, in the first room of the show, and I'll try and go a little more quickly so we can get to the radical part of the exhibition, but Bathers by a River was conceived in 1909, originally as part of a commission by Sergei Shukin, who was a patron of Matisse. He had purchased many of Matisse's images of bathers, his images of Arcadia. He had seen Bathers with a Turtle, the one we just saw, in Matisse's studio, and ordered what was originally three large mural-sized decorative panels for his home. And originally, Matisse settled on the themes of dance, music, and bathers. And he made watercolor sketches in preparation for the commission and sent these to Shukin. And the one on the right is the first known study for Bathers by a River. And eventually, Shukin would turn around and say that he only wanted dance and music. He did not want the Bathers panel. But Matisse kind of set it aside and worked on it as his own project, not for a patron, not for a dealer, just kind of his own experiment. And it's something that he worked on for nearly a decade and resulted in the very radical abstracted canvas we see in the galleries today. I just wanted to point out that the study he did for dance, called Composition Number 1, resulted in this oil study on the right, a full-size study that's in MoMA's collection. It's not in the exhibition, but it is on the fifth floor of the museum if you'd like to see it. After this sketch for Bathers by a River, we also have evidence of Matisse starting this canvas much earlier based on a watercolor done by his son, Pierre. His son would work in the studio with his father and make sketches. You know, he was given a watercolor set, and this is something that was discovered very recently during our research for the show, that Pierre made this sketch of his father's large painting, and so we know kind of a little bit of what Bathers looked like in 1910 through a 10-year-old's eyes. And we see that, you know, it is very much related to the watercolor and a kind of more naturalistic depiction of the scene, a little more lush and lifelike compared to what it will become. Before we get to 1913, we wanted to touch on some of what Matisse was doing before that will kind of inform his methods in the 13 to 17 period. He spent some time in Morocco and made these figure paintings on two separate trips, and they illustrate two different techniques of Matisse's. The one on the left is kind of a simple line drawing filled in with flat areas of color. It's a little more spontaneous and less reworked than paintings like Bathers with a Turtle and what we'll see going forward. Fatma on the right is another example of him doing all of these revisions, and it's kind of very heavily painted. He's added all of these layers of green and these kind of glazes of color that give it a greater luminosity, but he's also really revised the figure. I mean, when you look at the painting upstairs, you'll see parts where he's painted out kind of part of her forearm and part of the figure, kind of slimming her down, but also using those marks from the underpainting as part of the final composition. So they result as being shadows or just parts of showing you that revision on the surface. And these portraits as well from a year earlier, from 1911, a portrait of his wife on the left, and Olga Mirsen, who was a student of his, on the right. And again, he's not only revising these, but he is bringing in these very strong black lines around the figure on both of them, kind of showing you how it's constructed. So they're not necessary for understanding, you know, what this woman looks like, what either of these women look like, but he's showing you kind of what would have been the underdrawing of the painting and bringing it up to the surface. So these lines that kind of break up the figure
and cut into her forearm, and how this blue of the background cuts into her hip. It's just a very different depiction of a figure that's not from life, not what he's seeing in front of him, but something that he's making these changes to, and really interested in showing you the process and how it's constructed. So 1913, Matisse, he returns from Morocco from his second trip, and he continues work on Bathers by River and the back sculptures, which I'll show in a moment, but he also made several canvases kind of infused with blue. And when you look at these paintings upstairs, you can also see kind of underneath the surface all of the colors that were there at one point. So he was working in a more lifelike, naturalistic palette, and then he's really infusing these paintings with blue, kind of reducing them to a single color as much as he can, while maintaining some element of depicting reality. But his use of blue at this time is also interesting in relation to other artists he's seeing in Paris. He's of course aware of analytic cubism, where, you know, artists like Picasso and Braque are again reducing their palettes to kind of browns and grays and blacks, and they're doing that in order to emphasize the forms and the relationship of the different forms in space. And Matisse is doing something similar with this blue. In fact, this element here on the right of the blue window is something called a clawed mirror, and it's something a device he would have used in making his paintings. It's basically a mirror without the silvering on it, so it shows a reflection of the scene, but it's kind of reducing all of the color out of it, so it's just focusing on the forms and how they relate to each other in the space. And so he's using a device like that to make a painting that is this kind of reduced and simplified. So I mentioned that also in 1913, Matisse continued working on Bathers by River, and we know that from photographs, black and white photographs that show him working on the painting. And while these tell us a little bit about the transformations that he made, these changes to the figures and making them, you know, larger and more abstracted, it was difficult to tell from these little glimpses of the painting with Matisse standing in front of them. And the, you know, obviously the painting is not, it's not in plane. We have these highlights against it that are kind of washing out what's on the surface. For this exhibition, we were able to reconstruct from those black and white photographs what the painting might have looked like. So what this represents on the left is that piecing together of all of those photographs, all of those glimpses we have of the painting, and piecing them together, bringing the canvas into plane so that we can see the surface, and just cutting out like any element. You know, these are all Matisse in front of the painting, but blacked out and removed from the surface to kind of focus on the painting itself. And we see a painting truly in transition from that earlier landscape. He's making these figures larger. He's moving them around, and what we see in the photograph is confirmed by the x-ray of the painting, where we see all of these changes on the surface. I'm sorry, underneath the surface. The painting was photographed again in 1913, or at the end of 1913 in November, which again shows even greater transition from, you know, 6 months before. He is adding these very geometric semicircles of foliage, these ripples of water, representing the stream, but the figures themselves are becoming more geometric and larger. I mean, you can see here the shoulders from the previous figure and how he's made her much taller, but you can see that ghost of the previous composition kind of inside of her. Here you see these pink legs are from the original 1909 state, and he's made them kind of very geometric in these kind of wedge-shaped forms. You know, looking at cubism, looking at other artists that are working at the time and being influenced by that and making kind of his own version of this kind of abstraction. These two images represent another kind of technical aspect of the research we did for the show, which was recolorization of this photograph, kind of similar to how black and white movies can be recolorized. We did this for the photograph using cross sections of the painting. So taking kind of microscopic samples of the final painting and seeing all of the layers from the very top all the way down to the ground of the canvas and figuring out, you know, how they match up and how there were these pink flesh tones on the figure, but how he's also really infusing this canvas with so much black and gray. I mean, that's not just from the photograph, it's what we know from cross-section. So the same way he was using the blue in those earlier still lifes to kind of reduce the palette and really identify the forms, he's doing the same thing here. It's very not Matisse-y to be using all this black and gray. We think of him as this painter of bright colors and very sensual paintings, and this is a very different Matisse from before. So in 1914, Matisse and his wife moved to a studio right in Paris. They had been living in EC, in a suburb outside. And in this new studio on the Quai Saint-Michel, he made, I think, about a dozen paintings within the first 6 months of living there. And they're all kind of approximately the same size, but they're very different subjects and very different techniques. Some of them are very kind of heavily reworked and abstracted and purged of detail, and some are more delicate and more lifelike. So the interior with Goldfish on the left is the earlier painting. This, you know, it's his studio. It's kind of in shadow. We see this lovely pink light on the buildings outside, this kind of afternoon light in Paris, and very readable forms. I mean, we can see this table and the goldfish bowl, and he's made revisions to it, but it's still a very legible painting. The one on the right, Matisse said he made this about 8 months later, and he said he was going to revise his goldfish painting, but this time with a figure sitting and observing the scene. And we don't have much left of a figure, but we do have this palette on the right side with a thumb sticking through it, which is kind of the last remnant of this figure who was sitting on the right side of the canvas. If you look closely, kind of especially upstairs in front of the painting, you can almost see legs here that he would have had kind of under the surface and painted them out as he made this a more abstract painting. He's really, seeing the two together, you realize how much he has flattened out the scene. You know, you lose all of the diagonals of the lines receding, the perspectival space. He has taken this mullion of the window and expanded it to be this whole black band down the middle, just making it incredibly frontal and flat and kind of losing your sense of space within the scene. So this is kind of one of the most radical of 1914, of the end of that year. And also just fascinating looking at the painting, especially in person, is all of the scraping in here. You can see very bright colors underneath the surface that he reworked. And that, you know, as he continued to paint out, he would make it kind of less colorful, more austere, more severe pictures, but then he would go back into the surface and scrape down to kind of bring some of those colors up. Here, again, are two paintings he made in that original six-month period of 1914. The view of Notre Dame on the left, where he has painted out a lot of the architectural elements. We see, kind of under the surface, you see a lot of black lines that represent the space outside of his window, outside of his studio. And how he's painted it over with blue, he's kind of completely kind of made it unrecognizable. He's purged it of any kind of detail. I mean, you do have these diagonals that are receding into space. This arc here is the bridge over the Seine, and these towers up here are the two towers of Notre Dame Cathedral. It's very difficult to read, but he's using these kind of very dark blacks to show shadow and to kind of give you some sense of space, but it's certainly kind of the most extreme of his experimentations kind of at the beginning of that year. And the portrait on the right, again, is an example of him kind of reworking a canvas, making all of these anatomical changes to the figure, painting something over. It's, you know, it was said by people who were there for this sitting of the portrait that every day that Matisse would start it over again, he would kind of start over. He would paint it over, he would start from the beginning, and made it, kind of infusing it with all of these blacks and whites, making it very monochromatic, and kind of the most aggressive scraping he's done on any of these paintings. All of these white lines are scratched into the surface. He made these lines around the figure at the very end, kind of the last sitting, his last attempt at the painting. And he said that those lines were to give the figure amplitude in space. So it's kind of giving her some volume, even though it's so scraped down. But he's kind of using these layers of paint and all of the scraping to, as a kind of this sculptural approach to painting. And you can kind of see in her face kind of reds and kind of flesh tones underneath, which are probably a remnant of the beginning stage of the painting. So when he started it, it was maybe a little bit more lifelike. And Matisse himself was very shocked by this painting and how far he was able to take it, and kind of didn't recognize it when he was done with it. Matisse made the painting on the left as a student. His teacher, Gustave Moreau, would send his students to the Louvre to make copies of old master paintings. And so that's what we have on the left. It's a painting Matisse made when he was about 23 years old in the Louvre. And it's a pretty true replica of the Dahin painting that he copied. And when he rediscovered it in 1915, he decided to rework it. And this is where he said he was going to remake it using the methods of modern construction. So, which we do think is a reference to cubism, and he is kind of, he's using the same elements of the scene, but he's made it this very kind of programmatic, stylized grid and fitting everything into it. And like, if you look at all, you know, the four corners, you see kind of very, your eye is kind of drawn to them. So he has all of these strong diagonals and this strong geometric technique to making this painting. But he also said about remaking it that he wanted to add to it everything he'd seen since. So everything he'd learned since his student years, he wanted to bring into this painting. And when you look at it upstairs, you'll see that no part of the painting is painted in exactly the same way. So he's using a lot of different techniques. He's using kind of thick impasto techniques on some of the fruit here. This plate is kind of a very thin wash of paint, kind of all the way down to the ground. He's using scraping in the drapery here to kind of use it as a way to depict light, illumination. The strings on the lute, which are really difficult to see on the slide, but when you see them upstairs, they're very precise and thinly painted, and we're actually not sure how he did them, but he must have used some kind of straight edge or tool to create that effect. You know, they're so precise, they couldn't have been done freehand. Two of his most abstract paintings from this kind of 14 to 15 period, these coincide with the outbreak of World War I. Matisse actually had to abandon the painting on the left because he was in the south of France and had to return to Paris to kind of take care of some, you know, family business, and abandoned it. And kind of right before he did, he had painted this black area. Kind of, if we think of that black band down the center of Goldfish and Palette, it's kind of the next degree of severity in his painting. And when you look at the painting upstairs, you can almost very faintly see details of a balcony outside of the window that he's painted out. And he described the black as, you know, not just a depiction of shadow, but he used it as a way to express light. And he also said about black that he used the French word rustine, which means like a patch over a tire, over a hole in a tire, that he would use it as something to kind of be a placeholder until he figured out what to do next. So we're not sure if this is a finished painting or if he would have gone back to it. And if we think about kind of the portrait I showed Yvonne Landsberg with all of the scraping, that, you know, we wonder if he would have gone back to that if the circumstances were different, if the war, you know, hadn't had such an impact, if he would have gone back to this painting and scraped in and brought up those underlayers with the balcony and all the detail behind it. Composition on the right is, again, one of his kind of abstract scenes out a window. We have the curtain here on the left. This blue area is a glass balcony over the doorway of the home in EC out in the suburbs. And he described the yellow as, you know, not something he saw in nature, but his reaction to kind of the vibration between the blue sky and the green of the trees. So it was just something that he kind of felt as he looked out the window at this scene, and was not something he saw in nature. An important activity during the war for Matisse was his printmaking. When he was in the studio in Paris, it was a smaller studio, and they installed a hand etching press for him to use. And, you know, he's working on a smaller scale being in this small studio, but he also, you know, because of the circumstances of war, doesn't have as much access to paint and canvas and the supplies he needs to do the larger paintings. And he does printmaking, and he sells the prints to raise money for the war effort. He has family members in the north of France that are behind enemy lines. He has a brother who's been deported to a prison camp. And so he's selling these prints to raise money to send it to his family and to his hometown. And he sold a set of these prints and inscribed them for the civil prisoners of Bohain and Vermandois, which is his hometown. And Matisse himself wanted to enlist in the war. He wanted to participate. He was rejected because of his age, and he had a weak heart. So this was kind of his way to contribute in any way that he could. So he's doing kind of very simple portraits of friends and family members. He's doing still lifes, wives of artists who were serving in the war and kind of visiting the studio, and Matisse kind of took some responsibility for them while their husbands were away. And these monotypes on the bottom are something that he did for the first and only time in his career. So these are unique impressions. They're not part of an edition, and they're made by kind of applying the black ink to a copper plate and then drawing right into the plate. And then once the impression is made, that drawing is destroyed. So it's just the unique impression that you have one time. And I find them just fascinating in terms of the painting that he is doing and the scraping. And kind of it's a similar idea of this negative line and using scraping a negative line instead of a positive line to create these compositions. And also that they were kind of a relief for Matisse as well. I mean, he's doing all of these paintings that are very heavily reworked, that he calls them a painful effort, some of them, because of all the work he's doing to them, and he's trying to reach this kind of level of abstraction and kind of reworking them in paintings that he's working on for months and years at a time. And a print takes, you know, very little time and actually has to be done quickly before the ink dries. So it's kind of this spontaneous, kind of free way of expressing himself. So these are two still lifes he made in 1916, kind of leading up to a painting called The Moroccans, which I'll show in a minute, which was a painting that he conceived in 1912 and 13 when he was in Morocco. So these paintings, again, are kind of realistic in the sense we know what we're looking at, but that he's purged them of any kind of descriptive detail or scale around the still life, so we don't know exactly where they are. He's made them very monumental. And his use of kind of blacks and whites in here, this is a very thickly painted painting. We have a lot of impasto in the white, where he's kind of built up this very thick layer of paint, and he's using that as a means of showing illumination with this thick white. And the blacks are kind of very thinly painted, so you have this contrast in technique. The image on the right, he's taken like a stiff brush and kind of stippled into this area on the left to create this kind of texture. But we'll see kind of how his depiction of fruit in this scene is used again in The Moroccans. So here we are. So this area on the left is what I'm talking about. So these fruits, he calls them melons and gourds and leaves in the scene. So this painting, he made sketches for it in 1913 when he was in Morocco. And originally, it was a bit more naturalistic. We had kind of steps in this area leading up to a cafe, figures reclining in a cafe, and this dome kind of in the distance. And there were kind of more perspectival lines and space in the original sketches than he's had here. And he may have stretched a canvas for this painting in 1913, we're not sure. But then when he returned to it in 1915, when he was back at EC, he realized that the canvas he had stretched was not of the appropriate size. He wasn't happy with it. He thought it was too narrow, and he decided he wanted to extend it by about 60 centimeters. So the original painting was abandoned, and he ordered a new stretcher and started anew on the painting we have today, and started in the beginning of 1916. And we kind of know where he expanded it in this area, because all of the sketches show the dome being kind of the leftmost part of the composition. So we think this is the area he extended. And kind of critical here is that his use of black and his kind of flattening of the scene, where, as I mentioned, you know, the sketches kind of gave you more of a sense of space. Here he's using black to kind of separate these three distinct parts of the composition, but also bring them together, his use of black kind of throughout the scene, kind of giving you all of this flatness, but also kind of bringing the elements together and giving them something in common. I mentioned that these are figures on the right. This here is actually a reclining figure, and we know that from sketches he made, sketches where it is a little easier to read what's happening. This is where the head would be, and these are feet kind of sticking out. And this is probably the top of a turbaned head. And up here we have a figure very abstractly depicted holding binoculars. So these two lines here would be the forearms of the figure with binoculars kind of looking out on Tangier. I have a few more minutes, so I'll just talk briefly about The Piano Lesson and Bathers by a River, the second and third of these three monumental paintings he made in the period, the Moroccans being the first. So this is a scene of Matisse's son, Pierre, in the living room of their home at Issy, playing the piano. This here is a painting which I didn't show, but it's The Woman on a High Stool from 1914 that's also in the exhibition upstairs. That was in Matisse's collection. It was hanging on the wall in the living room when he made this. This is the only depiction of a scene that Matisse actually would have, you know, been in front of as he was making it or making sketches for it. This here on the bottom left is a sculpture of Matisse's. And we know from sketches and from an x-ray of this painting that it was a lot more detailed when he started it, that there was a depiction of what's going on in the garden outside of the French doors, that there was kind of foliage, and down here there was a radiator in front of the window. And he's really painted everything out in these grays and greens and pinks and kind of reduced it to kind of a very somber palette, and kind of he's reducing it to such an extent that, I mean, you can still read the space and see what he's showing, but it's not as lifelike as it would have been, and as we've seen in the sketch and in a painting that he'll make after this, The Music Lesson in the Barnes Foundation, which he makes about a year after The Piano Lesson, and is a very kind of vibrant scene, and, you know, the whole family is shown either out the window or at the piano, and that's kind of Matisse's return to naturalism after this very severe period in 16 and 17. So I'll finish up talking about Bathers by a River. I've mentioned it several times in the talk already because he worked on it for such a long period of time. And part of the project of the show was really learning as much as we could about the painting. I mean, we knew he started it in 1909, but we didn't have kind of hard and fast evidence of that. And that came forward in our research. I showed the watercolor. There was also a photograph that was produced. The archive came forward and showed it to us of Matisse sitting in front of it in 1909. And the x-rays kind of show how it began as that very natural scene, like the watercolor I showed at the beginning, and became what we see here and what's upstairs right now. Kind of very radically revised. And I will show here. In 1916, he introduced these vertical bands to the painting, kind of giving it this flatness like we see in the Moroccans. You don't really have any idea of the space they're in the way you did with the watercolor. This black down the middle is maybe the stream, and maybe her foot is in the water, but we don't know exactly. So he introduced these vertical bands as a way to kind of separate the figures, but also kind of unite the canvas and bring it together. And we have reconstructed digitally what all of these changes were over the course of kind of the beginning of 1916 through the end of his work on the painting. And this was again done by cross sections. So these microscopic samples of the paint from the ground all the way up to the surface, and how they show us that, you know, there are distinct layers of paint in all of these areas, where some of these bands he changed as many as six times. So he's constantly revising and going back and changing his mind about what he wants to be on the surface. And this black and white photograph was taken at the end of 1916. And we can see that these gray tones are the same on either side of that right figure. And that's because it was these two blues on either side of her. But we now know, over the course of our research, that this is not the final painting, which is in this black and white photograph. It was reproduced a lot in the early years when the painting was first known, kind of not realizing that it wasn't the final stage. But we know now, because when we have the painting in front of us, that the last thing he did was make this band white and kind of encapsulate this figure, the second figure from the right, in this white paint. So that was one of the last things he did. He also scraped into these leaves on the left side, which was at one point thought to be damaged to the painting. And conservators, you know, decades ago had filled it in with inpainting, thinking that this was damage to the painting, not realizing that was Matisse's technique at the time to do all of this scraping and to kind of bring in colors from previous states of the painting, which, you know, were vivid in his memory. As something he, you know, was very important to him and worked on for such a long period of time. So we have some of these lighter greens in those leaves are from the earlier state, from the 1909 state of the painting. This green here as well. So we have some of these very vibrant colors from the beginning that would have kind of matched up to the dance and music panels that he made in 1909, 1910 that were part of the original commission. And I pointed this out in the photograph as well, the 1913 black and white photograph, but you can see kind of the legs here of what that earlier figure looks like, who is a little bit more human, I guess. So he scraped that down to bring up that pink, but here is not scraped down, he's actually added that to the top. So he's kind of playing with your perception of what's new and what's old from an older state of the painting, and kind of playing with your perception and your understanding of what's happening. So I think we're just running out of time, but I'm happy to take questions. Yes?
What is the white that is coming into the black there?
It's a snake, most likely. So it's sometimes read as a scene of Eden with that snake, and it came much earlier in, it was there from some of the earlier states from 1913, yes. I don't know in particular in this period. I think they knew each other earlier on, at the very beginning of the 20th century, but I don't think they were in contact here. Yes?
The Moroccans, how do you know they're melons in the lower left?
That's a good question. A lot of people see them as praying figures. Yeah, and that's a common interpretation. I didn't show it here, but we have a lithograph that Matisse made around this time of fruits and leaves that very closely resemble that part of the scene. And the lithograph he made is a copy of a Cézanne, another Cézanne that he owned. And also from sketches, if you go up to the show, you'll see four sketches to the left of this painting that he made in Morocco, but they're studies for this painting. And it's a little more clear in the sketch that's a still life of fruit. Yes?
On the bathers,
mm-hmm.
The description upstairs says that he used scrumbled paint. I don't know if I pronounced
it. Scumbled.
Scumbled?
Yeah.
What is that?
So I mentioned that he did this white over blue. It's just kind of a very thin, kind of brushy layer of paint. Scumbled, I mean, it's not a term I knew before working on this, but so if you look at the painting or in here upstairs, you can see the blue underneath. So some of these things we've learned about these paintings through conservation techniques, you can actually see with the naked eye. So you can see that blue underneath and know that he changed it. So it just refers to like a very light layer of paint kind of over a dry layer.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Do you think that Picasso or Picasso influenced him?
I think they had an influence on each other. Matisse was older than Picasso. He was about, I think, 12 years older. But they had a very positive and productive relationship. I mean, they were friends, but they were also competitive. I think they learned a lot from each other. And Matisse would have seen the Demoiselle d'Avignon at the end of 1907, which kind of disturbed him at first. But I think he knew what very important and innovative painting that was, and something like this may have kind of come out of that influence. But he influenced Picasso as well. He introduced Picasso to African art, So there's a lot of influence back and forth between them. Yes. Yes. I think, yeah, I mean, I mentioned with the monotypes too that I saw this relationship between the scraping he's doing in those prints and the scraping he's doing on the painting, but I also think the paintings do have kind of a sculptural approach, and we know in looking at things like the Blue Nude, which I showed at the beginning, that he was going back and forth between painting and sculpture, and that he was one influenced the other. And we also know that he worked on the back sculptures, which you'll see four of them upstairs kind of installed chronologically, not all together as they usually are in the garden. We know from his son's recollection that the back was to the left of Bathers by a River in the studio as he worked on both of them. And he kind of heavily reworked both of them in 1916. And so we know he was kind of going back and forth. And I see a strong relationship between the figure on the left and this back and this kind of segmentation down the middle of a kind of a ponytail or a spine. We don't know exactly what he's doing here, but this kind of monumentality of the figure too, I think, goes with both. Other questions? Yes?
Many of Matisse's works are over a long period of years. One of the Bathers is 8 years.
Yes.
How did the people at the time know when he was finished?
When he was finished? You know, we don't know precisely when he finished this because it wasn't exhibited until 1926. But we do know that he moved to Nice at the end of 1917, and that a canvas of this size he would not have taken with him. So that's kind of our best guess at when he finished it. And it was exhibited in his lifetime. So, you know, even if he may have gone back to it if he had stayed in Paris, at least he exhibited it and considered it a finished painting. Yes?
Why do you think he moved out of this radical period and back into a more traditional painting?
He talks about kind of not wanting to subscribe to a particular style, but also like when you're working on a certain project, like he is with these paintings and getting to this, you know, the most abstract he gets, he talks about taking it to that level and then you have to change course. You have to kind of close that chapter and start anew on something else. So I think he knew that this was as far as he wanted to go. He never goes completely abstract, neither does Picasso, but that he takes it to this level, takes it as far as he can. Something like this he works on for such a long time and describes it as a pivotal painting in his career, but I don't think he wanted to revisit that struggle again after kind of taking it to a certain level of conclusion. I think we have time for one more question, if anybody has any. Otherwise, we can wrap up. That's it. Thank you.